Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hi.
Chris Casso.
Hello.
And, of course, Nicole Lamb.
Hi.
How is everybody this fine evening?
Still conscious.
Just great.
Oh, it's only, it's not that late. We're still, of course, we're still conscious.
I never just maintaining. I just inject coffee in my veins now, just to keep going.
Yeah,
it's unseasonably warm here in the Northwest. It's mid October, but you know it's light jacket weather as opposed to full on parka outside.
Dry. And there's sun. Yeah. It's actually very pleasant.
The sun is so bright in the mornings.
So bright.
I can't handle it. Mm-hmm. Speaking of things I can't handle, that's not a very good segue. I was just Mr. Cole Hornaday actually showed this article. He forwarded this article to the Panel on Temper Facebook page about the ancient Roman comic strip with speech bubbles.
Yeah, I think that was courtesy of our dear friend Patrick Bromley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it was a it's in a cave just outside of Rome, and it's a Roman tomb in the northern Jordanian town of Beit Ross, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, but it's basically two warriors, it looks like, with speech bubbles, and some people are saying it's like a proto comic strip.
Mm-hmm. If you read Scott McCloud's Understanding Comic, which you will soon because I saw you buy it.
Well, I've read Understanding Comics. I got his follow-up to it or whatever that was called.
Rejuvenating Comics? What's it called?
Reinventing
Comics. I knew that.
You're close.
He basically posits that the first cave paintings are comics.
Yeah. Once you
narrow it down to sequential art, everything's a comic.
But my question is, if it is someone's tomb, is it... because they translated it in the article, and I think it's I am stabbed, I die. And I'm was this depicting the death of whoever was entombed here? Is it supposed to be an honorable recognition of this person's passing? Are we supposed to giggle and point at it?
Is this
you died.
Graffiti, and that's about Bigot Diggith or something. You know? But go ahead and edit that. It's not quite exactly
because history is as silly
thing.
As we make it.
Life of Brian is a brilliant film. So it says here that the most exciting aspect of the discovery, however, it may be that the text that accompanies these the most exciting aspect is the text that accompanies these images, and it's not more than 60 inscriptions explain the action. It's not exactly Alan Moore, quote, "Alas for me, I am dead," but the inscriptions promise interesting research. But most are written in Aramaic, but with Greek letters. And so take of that as you will, comic historians and regular historians. All right. Oh, we just thought it was interesting. Let's move on.
The regular historians are like, oh, we got to deal with the comic historians now.
Thought I got away from comic books.
It was so annoying. Yeah.
I was pedantic. Okay. Jeez.
So apparently Ben Grimm and Alicia Masters are getting married.
Do it.
In December. My question was, is Tom King writing this issue?
I think the rule is if the people look like a monster, they can get married. Because we previously just saw a week or two ago, or three, depending on where, that Killer Croc from the Suicide Squad got married to Orca from the Batman villain.
Oh, that was a marriage?
That's a marriage.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
It's the most beautiful thing ever.
So at least happiness can follow the giant monster people.
Well, do you think that the wedding of Ben and Alicia will stick?
Probably. It's just going to get interrupted by 50 villains throughout the course of the issue.
I mean, when Reed and Sue got married, that was the first Fantastic Four annual, and I think that was the comic had been running for 2 years by that point or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that was a really big deal to have these comic book characters get married and have all the superheroes in the Marvel Universe up to that point in time, which is 1966 or something like that. Please correct me, comic book scholars, please do.
Historians, I beg you.
They tuned out during that last segment.
Did they? All right. Okay.
Let's talk about them like you're not here. Yeah.
I would like to see it stick. I would like to... I've already expressed my happiness over the FF returning to the universe and bringing with them some fresh new stories. But I love legacy in superhero universes, and we don't have that, but in the Marvel universe, and even then,
what if you could just stick to it?
Yeah,
marriage, yeah.
But you know, even after the Secret Wars and the recapitulation there, at least it wasn't as brutal as the DC reboots. But I love legacy. I love history, and I want to see what happens, because Lord knows we've had tons of stories about like the progeny of Ben and Alicia and the Earth-X stories. If you want to try and go dig those out, just call me. I'll give you all mine. You know, where you have the Grimm twins that are their children. I want to see all those things kind of come to fruition. Mm-hmm. I want that legacy to grow.
I believe that they'll do it, because I think Dan Slott's wanted this since he wrote the Thing miniseries like a decade ago. But if they're going to throw us a curveball, I'm going to call it right now, and they're going to end the last page with, it's not Alicia, it's a puppet made by her father, the puppet master.
Her uncle.
Uncle? Is it uncle? That was father.
Let's look it up.
Uncle.
Let's stop everything.
I'll go with uncle. yeah, it's just like there's a few openings there that make me a little nervous. Like,
yeah.
Or maybe she's a Skrull and she's going to fall in love with Johnny again.
Just give me a good Jewish wedding already. Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah. Exactly.
They finally
was a Jew.
Yes.
Yep.
They finally
I did it.
Gave him his bar mitzvah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So let's follow up. Good Jewish wedding.
And in the marketing, he is wearing his yarmulke.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, we better get this wedding.
Oh, well. You won't need a lot of superheroes to like carry
Look,
him around on the
Ben's,
chair.
He's a good boy. He's worked hard. He loves this woman. She loves him. Just let it happen.
Just let it happen.
You don't have to wait long. It's going to happen in Fantastic Four number 5 in December, which is also going to be the 650th issue anniversary. I guess that's the legacy number.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Are they doing it on everything where they're putting their little legacy numbering? So it's like if you want to have your legacy numbering, there you have it.
You can pretend it's happening.
Yeah.
Yep, go
yeah,
for
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Collect all 650.
It's that weird little code below the actual number, like 5 or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. There's also a wedding special comic coming out as well.
Better be a wedding in there.
Yep.
I need happy times.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah.
Put
my foot down. For real.
Okay, let's all scoot to the side of the table.
Marvel.
I have a lot of coffee in me.
Marvel has introduced the latest roster for the Guardians of the Galaxy and on a cover, and it includes characters like Groot, Moondragon, Nova, Silver Surfer, Cosmic Ghost Rider, Adam Warlock, Better Ray Bill, Darkhawk, Phylavale, Guardian, and Star-Lord. They say only 6 of these characters are going to go forward. And
is
the only
be
one,
like a finalist round or something?
It's like The Voice, I guess.
Something
no,
like that,
really.
Yeah.
The only one that they know for certain that's going to maintain is Cosmic Ghost Rider.
It's like, so you think you can space, and then you have to like go through all these different hard rounds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how many...
You are America's cosmic bait, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Do we know just offhand how many different iterations of the Guardians there have been?
At least 5. 4 or 5.
That's tough.
Depends if you're throwing in weirdo future things, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you got the original, and then you've got the Abnett Landing one, mm-hmm. and there was something in the middle there.
I thought the 90s.
You got
the 90s had some of the original characters.
And then you've got the Bendis doing the movie version.
Right.
And then you've got, that's been rebooted 5 times on
its own. That's had a lot of different iterations. Yeah. People are here, and then they're off doing something else, and then,
So I'm just going to say 5 and just pretend that's right.
Just call it good for now.
Just call it good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, as long as it better end up with Cosmo the dog. It's not complete if it doesn't have Cosmo.
And I'm excited about Moondragon coming back.
Sure, yeah.
I understand, not dog, but still.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, she's pretty rad.
How long has she been turning into a space dragon? That was never a thing before.
That was Abnett Landing time period.
Oh, no wonder I didn't read those. That's goofy.
Aw.
But they walk on the beach together and they're in love. Again, I just want love, okay?
I'm
Jesus.
Being followed by a moon
was a
dragon. Moon dragon.
Okay, let's...
And that's the signal to move forward.
Just try to rein this in.
Yeah. You can't. I'm still coughing.
All right. Speaking of the Guardians of the Galaxy, James Gunn, as we all know, was fired from his duties helming the third movie. And we've already discussed this. We don't need to go into it. But it's official. DC has hired James Gunn to write and direct Suicide Squad 2.
That could only improve it.
Yeah.
I know. I'm like, I saw the first one. Meh, but since James Gunn is writing it, I'll
see it. If it was edited better...
It could have been better.
It could have been better. Yeah, it was the editing that really shot it in the foot. Yeah.
No, the script was absolutely stupid.
The script wasn't great, but if you had a better editor on the backbone of that,
it can fix anything.
It can really fix it.
Making Amanda Waller a sociopath, psychopath? Yeah. No, yeah. We're done. No. No.
I heard it's that dark. Dave Bautista wants a role in the Suicide Squad.
I love the idea that he's just like, I'll follow you forever. Exactly.
You got to appreciate that that sort of commitment.
Yeah.
All right.
It's because
you are
friends.
My captain.
Yes.
This was kind of scary. Brie Larson, who plays Captain Marvel, has signed a deal for 7 movies.
I like scary. That is the right word. That is, I made a deal with Faust, and I am forever bound to this contract.
Does Captain Marvel even figure in that deeply into the Marvel stories?
Well,
it
doesn't say that it's going to be 7 Captain Marvel movies. Right. So
well,
could
it'll
just
be Avengers
just
and,
be, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She'll show
an
up.
Ultimates movie?
Yeah.
She just wants her Galactus.
Yeah.
I just want that team. I like that team a lot.
Yeah. Okay.
Carol's not obnoxious on the team, so it's good.
Anyway, I saw that and I'm like, 7 movies.
That's a lot.
We are not going to live to see
them. Probably
be
not.
Okay.
Because some of those could just be like Civil War, where she's only got 10 minutes of screen time overall. Sure. So, you know, at first I started doing math. I'm like, wait, if that's a movie every other year, then I guess like 14 years worth of contracts. Like, oh, no, she's just going to show up and say hi in like 2 of them. You know, that's it.
Just checking off her movie punch
Ms.
card.
Marvel movie.
Yeah, and she could show up in that. Yeah, we better. Yeah, exactly. We better.
There, yeah. So there are places list. Where she could figure in.
For the next Avengers, she'll be in the team.
Right. Well, yeah. No, that's a given. All right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. Moving on, announced that the New York Comic Con Young Justice will return, spearheaded by Brian Michael Bendis' new teen-focused DC imprint called Wonder Comics. What does that mean?
I'm burnt out on Bendis. I think I've vented that here, yes?
Yeah, this is a thing I do want to see happen. I'm just nervous that he's at the helm at it.
Yeah, it says he's going to curate the line, and curate is in quotes for some reason. He won't be involved with every book in the initial roster. He will co-write Naomi with David Walker with art by Jamal Campbell.
He's got the core book, though.
Yeah.
And that's the one that matters the most to me because it's the return of... Excuse me. Of... Superboy, the good Superboy, the right one, the sweet Superboy, the one who was a clone of Superman and actually developed as a character over the course of like a decade. And then they just like murdered Connor. And they just threw him to the wolves and hasn't been around for like the past 8 to 10 years. And it's bringing back Bart Impulse and it's bringing back Tim Robin. So it's like it's a reunion of like the original Young Justice. And it's just like, yeah, I want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm nervous.
It could be good. It's just,
art by Patrick Gleason,
which makes it a big, big good check. That's great. Yep. So there's the hope.
Yep, lots of fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, speaking of DC, I was out of the loop for a while, but I heard some chatter about something going on with Bruce Wayne's outfit. Did he have
the Batwing?
The Batwing, yeah.
The Batwing.
Batwing.
Or Bruce Wang.
Bruce Wang. Yeah.
All right, so what's the deal? What happened?
So DC launched a new imprint called the Black Label, which is the mature readers book, where basically it's just we want to hire a bunch of creators who aren't regulars, so we're just going to release graphic novels and they can do whatever they want.
Like Elseworlds sort of stuff.
They have Frank Miller doing Superman Year One, so you know there's going to be a Super Wango with that. And then they've got Kelly Sue DeConnick doing something with the Amazons. Greg Rucka doing something with Wonder Woman and somebody doing something with something. And So it's supposed to be mature. And so first issue of Batman Damned, he's naked for a couple panels. Like, he's barely naked. Visible.
You see his phallus mm-hmm. in one panel in this comic.
Yep.
He's naked.
Yep.
Yeah.
You get the outline in another panel.
And you know what happens in the Batcave? Stays in the Batcave. So, but apparently this... I don't know why they decided to do it, but they decided that their digital copies were going to not have the phallus showing.
After the first release, though. So if you
bought... The print version came out.
If you bought the original digital version, it did come with the Wang, but then in later uploads, no Wang.
Yeah. Interesting.
Which is a weird thing because you're not getting what you're paid for.
Right, and then that caused a whole stir because then it becomes this sort of
Wang.
It becomes this sort of rare thing. And then also I think reviews were starting to come out and it was starting to gain some traction. I don't know if we mentioned it. It's Batman Damned. It's a 3-issue series by Brian Azzarello. And who does the art?
Lee Bermejo?
Lee Bermejo. Yeah, so people were starting to just get excited about it. But because of all this thing, it made it a whole tizzy. It made it a whole thing.
And they refused to reprint a paper version. So I can't get the story to anybody now.
Yeah.
And that's that. And also, apparently, DC is now going to fundamentally change the scope of what Black Label is because they weren't prepared for this. And so that this sounds like
a
Time Warner.
Sounds like a Marvel move.
Yeah.
It's like a corporate head just got word of it and went, no, we can't do that.
Yeah, even though you've been publishing Hellblazer and Vertigo for the longest time.
Well, let's remember what happened to the Last Temptation of Swamp Thing.
Anything Alan Moore writes, I mean, that's going to have a Wang in it.
Even before that, when Garth Ennis worked for DC and he introduced the Boys, they kicked him out because not one of the normal editors, they all saw it and they were like, fine, it's Garth Ennis. We know what we're doing.
Yep.
But one of the Time Warner execs read it and he's like, you're doing what with a hamster? Mm-hmm. And then they kicked him out. And
I mean, I can understand that, but yeah.
That's essentially, it was Time Warner who put the kibosh on the Rick Beach Last Temptation of Swamp Thing story, which has never been reprinted.
So floating corporate heads just don't know what they actually did.
So Batman Damned is otherwise a good title.
I didn't read it.
No?
Maybe. I don't care for Azzarello. The man hasn't been able to finish a story in a good way ever since I first read him.
Okay.
But people do like him, and the artwork is pretty.
And people kept coming in wanting copies of it.
They hit her.
Oh, yeah. It was like Wednesday release, and we still had tons of copies. And Friday hit, and that must have been when like the digital thing happened, where they changed it up, and the reviews were coming in. I was getting phone calls constantly.
Really?
All day Friday, sold out like midway through Friday.
And when I opened on Saturday after that, within the first hour of being open, I got at least like 7-8 phone calls. Right? Just, do you have Batman Damned? And the thing is, nobody recognizable, and they spoke in such a way that I'm like, you don't buy comics regularly, do you? You just want the D right now.
Yeah, I felt like I was really all about it. Like, you just really want that D. Like, all these boys want this D right now. But I do think that there must have been some traction with the reviews as well.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when people sniff a potential rarity in comic books, they think it's like the next big thing and they need to grab, you know, 5 copies of something.
Yeah. They're expecting to see it up on the wall with
at some point it being the next Walking Dead or something like that, you know, and it's just so far and few in between. It's so rare to have that be a rarity.
Yeah. And that's not going to make.
Yeah. But a lot of it's just that quick turnaround on eBay, you know, for the speculators, just to try to get it for that first week or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's true.
So I've never seen boys more excited for a D without being in like a gay bar or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I did read a really great review. It wasn't really a review. It was just an article on the website Women Who Write Comics. And they basically got every woman that was on staff to like, what did they think about this?
Yeah.
And there was just such great range of comments on there. I think they got like almost like 30 different comments, and some of them just being like, finally, you know?
Oh yeah. There was someone I spoke to, and she was all like, hey, I'm not mad about it. I was like, yeah, you know, this is good.
Something for the ladies, too.
Right? That's right. Yeah. That's right.
All righty. Well, so that's the Batwing story. I feel like a better person now for knowing. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody. Cole Harnaday, let's start with you. What do you want to tell us about?
Oh, gosh. You know, I brought so many books with me tonight. I'm not sure where to start. But also the other challenge is that I read enough of them several months ago, and now I don't remember what happened in them.
You were very passionate about this one.
And I don't remember off the top of my head enough to talk about it other than it's really awesome.
Okay.
So I think I'll talk about the Sandman universe, which is part of the new Vertigo reboot-ish kind of thing. My understanding is Neil Gaiman did the outline of the story. Basically, this is just a foundation book that's an entry point for the stories of all of the rebooted Vertigo titles from, are we doing a Sandman book? The Dreaming?
Dreaming.
Are we doing The Dreaming and then
Lucifer.
And Lucifer.
Books of Magic and House of Whispers.
And House of Whispers is the new entry, and that is actually the only one I'm excited about. Mm. I did pick up the first issue of that. Didn't have time to read it before I got in front of the microphone. For the most part, tonally, this feels like the books from back in the day, because I did read them all. I did not read Lucifer. I read The Dreaming. I read, of course, the Sandman comic. You know, I take back what I said. I did not read Books of Magic. I read The Dreaming, and I read Sandman, and then I read Lucifer after the fact, and really enjoyed it. I read them in trades after the fact and was surprised at how good it was. This is it's a suitable introduction to the characters and themes, but it's also reinventing the wheel. Because if you read all these Vertigo books back in the 90s, there's not really a whole lot of new information for you, aside from the House of Whispers, which is Vertigo's doing something that they should have done a long time ago, which is explore magic from other cultures. In this particular, it's Louisianan voodoo and dealing with lesbian and people of color, or actually both. That's the one I'm curious about. That's the one I want to explore. So as sort of like a little sampler of what the Vertigo line, the new Sandman universe line, is going to look like, it's worth picking up. But the only thing that excited me, like I said, was House of Whispers. So, and there are numerous contributors: Simon Spurrier, Nalo Hopkinson, Kat Howard, Dan Waters, Bilquist Evely, Domo Stanton, Tom Fowler, Max Fiumara, Sebastian Fiumara, Matt Lopez. So, and those are all the artists that contribute to the various installments that are launching points for these stories. So, yeah, if you're curious about what this is going to be about, what's going to happen, go ahead and pick it up. If you want to really gain appreciation for these characters, go back and read the originals.
So for fans of the originals, and, you know, they might be missing the title, since it hasn't had anything in a while. Would you recommend it in that capacity,
then? Yeah, because tonally, I was like, there's Matthew. I miss Matthew. And Lucian and the library in The Dreaming, mm-hmm. and Jack Pumpkinhead. You know, there are all these characters that we come back to that I actually really miss. And I miss them enough that I go back and reread the Sandman books.
Yeah.
Because I do like those characters. And they were treated well, and they had that quality that Gaiman had originally given them. So,
good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. So tonally, and they're true to the characters. And that
I think
sort of thing.
So. Cool. Yeah. But I'm going to be particular about the books that I read that are part of this universe.
Gotcha.
Cool. All right. The Sandman universe. Thank you, Cole.
Sure.
Chris, what do you got?
So we mentioned Suicide Squad earlier, so I may as well review Copra. So I'm very, very far behind, and I'm catching up to, 2015, I guess. And so I read the first two books of Copra. This a lot of people really, really love it. They swear by it. And I read the first issue a long time ago, and I was just like, eh. And so this is me giving it the second chance. So 2 years from now, I'll do the same for Black Hammer. because this falls in the same place, so I'm going to talk about that briefly.
Got it.
Last episode I mentioned, or two episodes ago, I mentioned we were talking about burnout. And one of my very particular burnouts is analogs and tribute characters. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I'm done with it. I don't care. So Kopra is the best Suicide Squad comic that is not the Suicide Squad.
Cool.
It is the one of the best fan comics, maybe? But that almost seems like a disservice to call it that. Michelle Pfeiffer is the writer, artist, publisher, letterer, inker. He's everything. He did everything. There's actually, in the back of the second book, he writes about it, and it's just like, how are you not insane? And he talks about, like, I almost went insane at the last stage. And he's just like, he doesn't have an intern. He doesn't have assistants. He just does it. And he quotes something that I shouldn't say because it does swear. But so basically the setup is that they're very much the Suicide Squad. They're sent on a mission, and somebody betrayed them, and half the members died, and they're all framed for it. And so they're on the run, and their version of Amanda Waller is on the run with them. And that's basically the push of the story. It also guest stars Shade the Changing Man and Doctor Strange and the Punisher. Like, they're obviously those people. And there's, like, no mistaking, this is Doctor Strange and the Punisher. And even the one that made me mad at first is that there's a character named Lloyd. And, like, he's Floyd Lawton. He has the mustache. He has the exact same costume as Deadshot. Why are you not being sued right now? But because it's essentially a parody. They have Count Vertigo, but he's not Count Vertigo. And so there's a part of me that's angry at that because I'm tired of that stuff. But he does such a good job with it. And he runs it through the Grant Morrison Doom Patrol machine, because all the villains are these utterly bizarre creatures, and there's, like, alternate reality weirdness going on, and his paneling is completely inventive and amazing as weird things happen. And so he's got a little bit of Steve Ditko in there and a little bit of Jack Kirby. The Ditko stuff gets kind of amazing because the character who's Shade the Changing Man narrates an issue, and he's talking about moral objectivity and how there's, so, you know, he's either completely good or bad, and I'm a hypocrite now because I did this one thing. So it's like it's a nice commentary on old creators as well. So I do highly recommend it. It is an amazing feat because it's self-published, self-distributed, everything. I just have to get over my whole thing of, like, why can't you just make something that's not Suicide Squad? But it is what it is. There's also this fantastic villain named Dee Dee, who's basically like a MODOK thing that's like a brain in the jar. And there's this great sequence where, like, there's technicians gluing the eyes onto the jar because she doesn't really need eyes. She just wants eyes. And one of them, like, messes it up and she vaporizes him. So it's just really bizarre, good, weird indie superhero.
Now, this is called Round 2. Is this the second volume?
Second volume. Okay. Yeah.
Did you read the first volume?
Yep. Yeah. I just didn't bring it here.
Okay.
I only had so much room in my backpack.
I understand.
But yeah, there's like 5 or 6 volumes out. It is a pain in the butt for stores to get single issue copies. Mm-hmm. I will note that. We don't carry it as single issues.
I think he still sells them direct, though, through his website.
You can order them directly from him, but we can order trade paperbacks. Mm-hmm. Most of the time they're available. So yeah, I highly recommend it. It's just because of, you could tell he loves what he's doing. And he is a craftsman, and his designs for pages are amazing for me. So, yeah.
Cool. Kopra. Yep. Or Kopra.
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 I think.
Rounds 1 and 2. Okay. I don't know. Thank you, Chris. And finally, Nicole, what do you got for us?
So I was looking at my library app last night, and I came across another Josh Simmons book. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast, I reviewed a Josh Simmons anthology called Flayed Corpse. It was a weird indie one that was mostly done by him, but also had some of his friends in there. And it just went all over the place, but definitely was a bit more on the extreme side of the mature rating in a lot of ways. And so I found another book of his called Black River. And they, in this description, they describe it as just like a group of people, like a women, one man, two dogs, and they're just making their way through this post-apocalyptic world in search of a city that supposedly has like electricity and self-sustaining and everything like that. And they come across some comedy club, and they take a drug called Gumdrop, and they encounter gangs of men, and all sorts of terrible things happen. And while that does really, it does happen, it just is sort of this, you're... I'm trying to figure out exactly what the point of it is, because sometimes there's indie books that they're just existing because it's like somebody getting stuff out of their brain, if that makes sense. Like they just open their head and stuff pours out and then they're like, there, it's a comic book. And I feel like Josh Simmons does operate that way in a lot of ways. And while he does have a narrative here and it does follow those things, it left me feeling like, what am I getting out of this? Because it is very harsh. I mean, if you're looking at, there is sexual assault, there is murder, there is unfortunate circumstances that lead to people's demise. And it's pretty brutal in that way, unrelenting in the way that you may think of a post-apocalyptic world. So it does depict that well. But then there are also times when, like, the dialogue is something that I'm just like, this feels like Josh Simmons just in his home mumbling to himself, too, mm-hmm. you know, which I actually can appreciate mm-hmm. in a way, but it might not suit for everybody. Now, in the ways that it did really excel and was breathtaking for me was when he would have these long sweeping panels of a sky with the clouds. It was gorgeous. Like it's almost like a more fluid sort of Jim Woodring, how he does these interesting sort of psychedelic moments, but it's a little bit more on the realistic side. And I just caught, like, my eyes would just stay on those pages because they were just so beautiful. And I don't think that I had ever seen anything like that from Josh Simmons from The Flayed Corpse. So it had these moments of beauty, which was an interesting experience to have in this, like, brutality of a world. Mm-hmm. So I think if you like indie stuff and you're fine with brutal comics, or maybe that's something that you're looking for, Josh Simmons is probably somebody for you to follow. He loves macabre. He loves dark. He loves awful things happening. And it also has that punk edge that a lot of indie comics will have, because it's just these people just kind of doing their thing, getting drunk and partying and stuff like that. Obviously not for kids, but I just want to explicitly state that because it is very mature. But I think I'm going to follow Josh Simmons from now on just because it's weird. You know, mm-hmm. it's something different. And especially with seeing what he did in his art with Black River is pretty cool. So check it out if you want to, or absolutely avoid it. If this sounds terrible.
All right. Cool. Yep. Thank you, Nicole. Well, that is Book Apart, and that is our show. Coming up is Quiz Time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcast at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. As Quiz Time. This week, our questions come to us from Mr. Cole Hornaday. Laid on us, Cole.
Woo-woo! Okay, well, I got a little help with this one because I expressed to our dear friend and supporter, Patrick B., that I was a little bit burnt out. And so he actually wrote up a quiz time for us, and I did a little bit of embellishment, as I am wont to do. And we're going to call this one Amorous Aliens and Spaced Out Essos. Quiz time devoted to the cosmically lovesick, or the sick of love. Sick of love. First up, when Norrin Rad, a young astronomer from the planet Zen-La, agreed to accompany the world that devour Galactus as his intergalactic herald, the Silver Surfer, who was the royal love of his life that sad, sad Norrin left behind?
Zalabalaba.
Anybody? 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 Sisbamboom, yes. Shalabal, Empress of Zen-La, was created by Stan Lee and John Buscema and first appeared in Silver Surfer number 1 in August of 1968. Mr. Have Love, Will Travel cosmic hero Adam Strange's relationship with this woman is on again, off again, thanks to those pesky Zeta beams that bounce him from Earth to the planet Ran. Who is he always forced to leave behind?
I picture her, but I can't.
I probably read something with her.
Her dad's like bald and named Zardath or something.
You guys, You guys are killing me. Alana Strange. That's,
well, they keep leaving these ladies. How are we supposed to remember them?
Because it's a part of the crucial part of the story.
Okay.
It's their angst over lost love that keeps people then coming back.
They should say their name.
Nicole, I'm going to finish this one, and then you can do Nicole. Mm-hmm. All right? Alana Strange, daughter of Rand's greatest scientist, Sardath the Bald, was created by Gardner Fox and Mike Sikowski and first appeared in DC Showcase number 17 in 1958. This bald telepath and daughter of Drax the Destroyer was once romantically linked to Rick Jones's estranged wife, Marlo. Most recently, she's been in a relationship with a cloned Kree named Phyla Vell. Who would that person be?
She's Quasar now.
Is she Quasar now?
She's Quasar now.
Phyla Ball?
Phyla Ball?
But that's not what I'm referring to. Oh, the bald telepath daughter of
Moon Dragon.
I'm being followed by a Moon Dragon. Yes. Moon Dragon.
She's
Moon
Quasar.
Dragon.
She's draining right. Quasar.
Right.
There you go.
Okay. Draining.
Moon Dragon, first known as Madame McEvil, first appeared in Iron Man Volume 1.
Come on.
Stanley, come up with that one.
In 1973, her debut as Moondragon didn't happen until Daredevil Volume 1, number 105 in 1973. Moondragon, who follows me, was created by Bill Everett, Mike Friedrich, and George Tuska. Next up, she is the sole survivor of an alien race and trained from childhood to murder the distant future version of her eventual boyfriend, Adam Strange. Relationships, am I right? Can you name this assassin?
Gamora.
Okay, I didn't know this. Gamora, a.k.a. Gamora Zen Wabari Ben Titan. Is her name. Was created by Jim Starlin and first appeared in Strange Tales, number 180. I hope you have a copy of that because now it's mint and worth a lot of money in June 1975. Lastly, this love god of Titan has the power to excite pleasure in others. But She-Hulk eventually took this walking roofie to court, accusing him of using his powers to manipulate others for his own pleasure. Name that space creep.
Eros.
Eros, a.k.a. Star Fox, first appeared in Iron Man number 55 in February 1973. I'm being followed by a moon dragon, and that's quiz time.
All right. Well, thank you, Cole, and thank you, Patrick. And thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.